You're listening to audio from The Village Church, a community that's formed by the gospel and sent on God's mission, gathering weekly in the heart of downtown Hamilton, Ohio. For more information about The Village or to connect with us, you can find us online at myvillagechurch.com.
1 Samuel 29. The Philistines brought all their military units together at Aphek while Israel was camped by the spring in Jezreel. As the Philistine leaders were passing in review with their units of hundreds and thousands, David and his men were passing in review behind them with Achish. Then the Philistine commanders asked, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" Achish answered the Philistine commanders, "That is David, servant of King Saul of Israel. He has been with me a considerable period of time. From the day he defected until today, I have found no fault with him." The Philistine commanders, however, were enraged with Achish and told him, "Send that man back and let him return to the place you assigned him. He must not go down with us into battle, only to become our adversary during battle. What better way could he ingratiate himself with his master than with the heads of our men? Isn't this the David they sang about during their dances? Saul has killed thousands, but David, his tens of thousands." So Achish summoned David and told him, "As the Lord lives, you are an honorable man. I think it is good to have you fighting in this unit with me, because I have found no fault in you from the day you came to me until today. But the leaders don't think you are reliable. Now go back quietly, and you won't be doing anything the Philistine leaders think is wrong." "But what have I done?" David replied to Achish. "From the first day I entered your service until today, what have you found against your servant to keep me from going to fight against the enemies of my lord, the king?" Achish answered David, "I am convinced that you are as reliable as an angel of God. But the Philistine commanders have said, he must not go into battle with us. So get up early in the morning, you and your master's servants who came with you. When you've all gotten up early, go as soon as it's light." So David and his men got up early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up to Jezreel. This is the Lord of the Word, the word of the Lord. And you guys can have a seat.
Good morning. My name is Michael. I'm one of the pastors here. I want to pray, and then we'll get rolling. Father, thanks for all the privileges and all the grace that you give us. Thanks that you're near, you're not far off. Thanks that we get to sit under your word that you have written to others and preserved and prepared for us even today in a weird passage, and we know that many might be showing up for the first time or don't know where this fits, and others can laugh at the irony that we read in this passage. And would you just today let these words just ring loud, and would you use me to bring some clarity about what's going on here as we sit under your word together. Thank you for your abundant grace, in Jesus' name, amen. You know what it's like to be completely in over your head. I'm sure if we ask, hey, well, there was a time, like we know what it's like to be in over our head, to be tangled up in life, and part of that is because of the stories that we hear. There was a show that ran from 1986 to 1993, so 1,000 years ago. It was called Perfect Strangers, and there was one episode called Pipe Dreams. And it's a sitcom trope. It's something that we see time and time and time again. It's physical comedy, but essentially, cousin Larry, he has a girlfriend. She's in, I think, has an apartment, and she's like going to call a plumber to fix a bathroom issue. And he's like, "No, we can take care of this." Him and his cousin from Meepos, Balki Bartokamus. And some of you, I'm just opening up a world that you should swim in for a while, but it's fine if you haven't done that. So it's very sitcom trope. It's the shower doesn't work. Hey, can you help me with this? And there's some humor in that, but you know what happens is they break off the shower, and then gosh, and so then they find themselves sitting there. There's a time cut, and they're like, oh, well, I think it's done. And the camera kind of zooms out, and there's just holes all over the tile, and just holes all over. And Balki grabs, like, the supply shut off a pipe that's 6 feet long, and he's like, what's this? And Larry's like, well, that's trash. You know, like, we didn't need that. And we've, like, maybe you've been there. It's not the best thing where you take a car apart and you put it back together and you have a handful of parts that started there. So that's kind of what happens. So then they're like, well, let's try it out. And they like, you probably know what happens. They turn the knobs and then like the shower head shoots off. And it's like the most high pressure water you've ever seen. You would love to have pressure this high in your house, although you probably wouldn't have any skin on your body. And so the water's shooting off and then like, you know what they do? Well, turn the knobs off. And you know what happens next? The knobs break off, and then the water's shooting out there, and it's like, oh my gosh. And then so they're both holding those, and then you look around, and the sink on the other side just starts geysering up, you know, and so it's like, oh gosh. So Balki runs over, and he covers the sink, and he's trying to hold that down, and Larry's doing all the things, and then you know what happens next? It starts shooting out of the toilet, right? So Balki goes, and he's like sitting on the toilet with the water shooting all over. You can imagine the scene, and in that, the relatability piece is like, oh gosh, like when it rains, it pours, and I have been there, buddy, you know? It's easy to connect with. We've experienced days where it feels like the sky is falling on us and only us. The idea of a sitcom is that it is a, and this is just free for some of you, it is a situational comedy. Let that sink in. And what makes the best sitcoms are those that are relatable and that are even predictable. Once we get to know the characters, you can predict how they will react and how they will act. And yet it's still funny because it's happening to them and not you. And you're seeing situations like a husband-wife interaction. And it's funny to you because you were there last week, but you're not there today. And you just see the interaction. And so it's relatable, Perfect Strangers, Friends, The Office, Seinfeld, Home Improvement, I Love Lucy, The Neighborhood, King of Queens, Phineas and Ferb for some of you older cartoon people. All the things, Mr. Bean, Cheers. You just think these are things that can happen in my life. And the writer here, he writes with comedy baked in, and it is a dire situation that David's in. And I'll tease out some context in a minute, but it's character revealing, and we get to know him even more, and there are timeline jumps, and there are cliffhangers. We pick up here having just like ended last week or 2 weeks ago with just a drop-off, a cliffhanger where he's talking about something, David's in a real predicament, and then he just stops, and there's sarcasm just baked in here. There's things that you read, and you're like, that is not... All right, and we will get there. But there's this insider information, like the writer knows something that maybe we don't. And then the reader knows information that maybe the characters even in the story don't know. And so it kind of just draws us in. We get it. You think of the movie Sandlot, and there's like just the idea of a pickle. And in baseball, a pickle is when a runner rounds first, for example, they throw to first. Then they throw to second before the runner gets there. The runner turns around and he runs back to first, or she runs back to first. They throw back to first, and it's just this base runner caught in between two. That's what's called a pickle. And in the movie Sandlot, we see that the boy gets a ball, and he shouldn't because it's signed by the great Bambino, Babe Ruth, but he doesn't know what that means, and they hit it over the fence, and the dog gets it. And it's just this whole thing, these kids trying to solve like the worst day ever. And he says at one point, and that was the day that I got us into the biggest pickle of our lives, right? And so it's so relatable, but it might not be something like that. It might be credit card debt that you just like hammered away at, and you just look at the things and you say, I don't know how to get out of this. It might be egregious sin that you've committed that's done harm, and if someone found out, your world would cave. It would collapse. Maybe they have, and maybe today you don't know where to turn or what to do. Maybe you gossiped about a coworker or a classmate, right? And finally that gossip has found its way back to you, and now you have to deal with all sorts of things, and it just feels like I don't have a way out. You're in deep. We get into tangled webs, but God is faithful to deliver his people for his purposes. right? David gets himself into quite a tangled web, and it's been chapters in the making, and it's not the last time he's going to do this. This is King David, of all people. And so we're going to look at some patterns that help us process some of this. And the first thing is we see is this. We experience patterns of predictable problems. 29:1, the Philistines brought all their military units together while Israel was camped by the spring in Jezreel. And again, I know you don't know where this fits if you're new here, and I'll show you in a second. But as the Philistine leaders were passing in review with their units of hundreds and thousands, David and his men were passing in review behind them with Achish. And then the first part of verse 3, then the Philistine commanders ask, what are these Hebrews doing here? They don't fit in. And so I ask you this, can you imagine Joe Burrow, he's the quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, right? Football team, for those of you who don't know that. Can you imagine him showing up at a Baltimore Ravens team walkthrough the week before the game? And he's just dressed in Baltimore Ravens clothing, and everybody's like, all right, let's go. All right, let's get out there. And then they look around, and they're like, wait, what? Why is Joe Burrow here? And some of you are like, I don't understand. Okay, for you, imagine Thanos, right? He's a villain. He shows up at Stark Enterprises at the Avengers headquarters for a planning meeting on how they're going to save the world. And they're looking around, and it's Tony, and it's Hawk, and it's Captain, and it's Black Widow, and all these people, and they look around, and they're like, why is Thanos here? All right? Or maybe, right, for you historians, the great Scotsman William Wallace, right? And you look at the Knights of the Round Table. British King Edward I shows up, and they're getting ready to talk about how they're going to. The problem with Scotland is that it's full of Scots. How can we rid ourselves of these people? And they look over, and William Wallace is there, pointing to a map and saying, "Guys, no, I think we, like, what is he doing here?" Or, and I think you can all land here, right? Your fiance's ex is helping plan your wedding. And she's involved in arranging the flowers and deciding on the cake. And the day of the wedding, she's going to pick up your dress and bring it to you. And you tell your bridesmaids that. You know what they would say? Girl, you have lost your mind. That is exactly what's happening right here. David is not a Philistine. He's part of Israel, which is God's people, right? That was the day that David got them into the biggest pickle of all time, right? Tangled webs weaving. So some explanation required. I got you. Next slide, Andy. Israel, good, right? This is an oversimplification. Israel, good. God's people, right? Saul, not great, right? He's not great. He is not good, but he's also the king of Israel. David, I mean, he doesn't always get it right, but he's good, right? And also, he's the future king of Israel. You got to fast forward a little bit to get there, right? God's already anointed him king. And so he goes to the land of the Philistines. And you're thinking, well, who are the Philistines? They are bad, right? The Philistines are bad. Oversimplification. Achish, he's the king of the Philistines. Is he good or bad? He's bad. He's also king, and also he loves David, right? That's the story here. So what webs are woven here? He did this to himself. David does this to himself, right? It's a lie that forces more lies. And the tough thing for me, maybe for us, is that we don't have any commentary from God telling us what's good and what's bad. We don't know if David's in the right or in the wrong. And so here's what he does. He abandoned his people to spare his own life. That's what David did. That's why he got into the biggest pickle of their lives. He abandoned Israel to go live in the land of the Philistines, and he's been there for 16 months. He did that because King Saul was trying to kill him on repeat every day of his life. Was that the right thing or wrong thing? We don't know, but he did that. David abandoned his people to spare his life. Thanks be to God that we have a King Jesus who forsakes his own life to spare his people. right? Secondly, David found favor with the king of his enemies. And by day, he's talking to the king. He's like, yeah, here's what I'm doing. I'm out there slaying Israelites. They've abandoned me, and I'm on Team Philistine. That's what David says. But by night, he's slaying the camps of the Philistines, his enemies, on behalf of God and his countrymen. And lastly, he's invited to join the battle. And he has been doing this stuff, like night raids and all these things, and it culminates to, like, dude, the king says, you're going to have to fight with us at this battle. You're going to have to line up with our military garb on, and we are going to fight the Israelites together. And David's like, that's okay, I have to join the ranks, not as a raider, but as a soldier. He's in deep. Right? Like, we get it. We know what it's like to be in deep. You know, the eye shifts and, like, oh my gosh, the sweat, the Kermit, if you type in any GIF thing, like, nervous, you're going to see Kermit the Frog and, like, he's nervous, right? And so you get what it's like to, and remember, David got himself here with King Achish. King Achish is like, yeah, I want you to be here. I want you to fight on our behalf. And David says, oh, you'll see what I can do. That's what David said. Heart pounds. You imagine David and his people saying, how did we get here? But more importantly, how do we get out of this? We're dressed like Philistines going to battle against God and Israel. How did we get here? But here's the thing, David, he is savvy and he is calm and he's so in control. Page after page, he's three steps ahead of everyone. He's not like me. And he's probably not like you. There's no way he doesn't have a plan, even if the writer or the reader isn't aware of it. Predictable problems, because anyone could have seen this coming from all across town. David, you can't keep this up. You're living lies. How long could you keep this up? But here's the thing. The Bible is a book filled with relatable humans in relatable situations, and it spans culture and it spans time. It's part of what I get to do with the days that God allows me to have, is I get to listen to a lot of people. And I get to sit down and chat with men and women and moms and dads and people through thick and through thin, and people young and old, people celebrating, people suffering. And the cycle happens over and over again. It's the cycle of crisis and chaos, and it's part of every one of our lives. Like, I could probably guarantee that you are in, or you are near, or you are coming out of, or you are heading into a problem that might define your day, your week, maybe your month, maybe your year, and maybe your life. That's the world that we live in. And some of this is because your mouth betrays you. And some of it is because your emotions betray you. And some of it is because your keyboard betrays you. And others, it's because your friends betray you, or your family betrays you, or your nation, or your neighbor betrays you. David's here because of all of that. Saul has betrayed him, and David's holding a shovel saying, how did I get into this hole? It's all put together. He has a part to play in it. Problems are part of life because sin has its way. In creation, it breaks things around us, among us. And hear me, through us, through you, through me, through King David, through all of us. Most of us are not as cool under pressure as David, but even he is in a situation where we're like, how is this going to end? The second thing we see is unexpected rescue, the pattern of unexpected rescue. Let's read starting in verse 3. Then the Philistine commanders ask, what are these Hebrews doing here? Achish answered the Philistine commanders, that is David, servant of King Saul of Israel. And they're like, yeah, we know. That's the problem. He has been with me a considerable period of time. I think it says he's been with me for years. But that's not quite true. 16 months, we say. From the time that he defected until today, I found no fault with him. Oh, he's not with Israel anymore. He's one of us. Like heck he is. is what these Philistine commanders say. The Philistine commanders, however, they were enraged with Achish. You get the idea that Achish is a bit aloof? You get the idea? And told him, send that man back and let him return to the place that you assigned him. He must not go down with us into battle, only to become our adversary during battle. You don't have to be a military strategist to have the same thought. So you're going to have him and his men showing up as the caboose of our military as we fight Israel in front. What if he turned on us? Right. What better way could he ingratiate himself with his master, King Saul he's talking about, than with the heads of our men? Isn't this the David they sang about during their dances? Saul has killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. If hell on earth, Saul cannot get this song out of his head, right? And you remember, there's no way to record stuff. This is the land of the enemies. I won't give an example because that would be foolish. It would be like some other country having eyes on what's happening in your pop culture, right? And it's like they can't even believe this song is just like part of the thing that God uses to unravel Saul. Saul has killed his thousands, but David, isn't he he's the one that killed our giant Goliath? Yeah, we know who David is. So Achish summoned David and he told him, as the Lord lives, you are an honorable man. David, you're good. It's not you. It's not me. It's them. I think it is good to have you fighting in this unit with me because I found no fault in you from the day you came to me until this day. But the leaders, you know how they are. They don't think that you are reliable. Now go back quietly. You won't be doing anything the Philistine leaders think is wrong. Like, you're good. Just go back home to the land that I gave you in our land. And David, this is unbelievable. He's been slaying Philistines by night. But what have I done? King, sir, pardon me. But what have I done? David replied to Achish, from the first day I entered your service until now. You can imagine him taking a knee. What have you found against your servant to keep me from going to fight against the enemies? For my lord the king, vaguely, he says. It's unbelievable. What's he doing here? Oh, him? That's David, the great one. He's with me. He's been here for years. And I love David. That's what the king says. The princes of the Philistines were angry, understandably. One commentary says this, it must be considered a happy circumstance in the overruling providence of God to rescue David out of the dangerous dilemma. Right, we've talked about God's providence over and over, and in these daily things that look like, where is God at? We don't even hear him talked about other than by name from the king of the Philistines of all people. It must be considered a happy circumstance in the overruling providence of God to rescue David. The Philistine government had constitutional checks, or at least the king was not an absolute sovereign. His authority had limits, and God used that to deliver David and his people. The short of it is David was entangled in a self-made web. He shot, you know, webs all over, and then he started hitting himself, and then he just couldn't move. He was being forced to show his cards by either fighting with his enemy against God and the people of God, or by turning on King Achish and the Philistines, which might endanger his life. You might imagine, how would he get out of this? Maybe Saul has a change of heart. He sends a small team to deliver David and his people. Maybe Samuel comes back from the dead and gives him some wisdom and delivers him in some miraculous way. But what wasn't on the bingo card for David's deliverance on this day was that the Philistine troops, they just weren't having it. And his way out was, despite David's planning and his competence and despite how deep he's in, his rescue comes through the hands of the Philistine leaders who offer checks and balances to the king. And we would say to this wicked king, although he serves David well. What do we make of this then? What do we learn from this bizarre scene where God seems silent, and yet we read the story, the narrative from his word. Well, at a base level, like, hear this. God uses all kinds to deliver. Old Testament, New Testament, today, this is true. All kinds of leaders, all kinds of scenarios, all kinds of situations, all kinds of nations, all kinds of broken people in high places, all kinds of righteous people in low places to carry out his work, and he does it for his purposes. He does it through broken policy, and he does it through broken character, and he delivers through broken desires and broken emotions and broken lenses and broken votes. So what does that mean for us? It means that we don't get to be a people that are filled with and fueled by fear. If God can use musty, dusty, crusty Philistines to move the course of redemption history, he can use anything and anyone, competent or incompetent, corrupt or righteous. And it's why he sends his church out everywhere that we are over this entire globe. He sends us out to be a part of his redemptive work, to bring his kingdom near. So very pointedly, we see the pattern of getting in over our head is long-standing. What that means is that if you find yourself there today, you are in good company. One, with the people in this room next to you, and two, with the people on the pages of this book, every single page. And secondly, the pattern of unexpected rescue is long-standing, right? When we are rescued, we find ourselves in good company. So who gets David out of the situation? The Lord does. So we get to ask, when reading something like this, this is helpful for me, this is how I approach what we're doing, it's helpful for us, why is this here? What was true for them then? How is it true for us now? So when you're reading a narrative, the Gospels, the book of Acts, and the New Testament, most of the Old Testament, so much of it is narrative. It's story. And we don't always get the insight that we think that we need. We ask the question, what are all time, all people truths? No matter the context, no matter what was going on, what was true for them then, and how is it true for me now? And what's not, we might say, well, David was in battle. And when you're in battle, you need to make sure that, no, that's not you. That's not true for you. But what is true, as we zoom out a little bit? See, 2 Samuel, it goes on to build David's kingship, and we get to see it kind of in full. God is preparing the way for David's life in front of us, for him to be a flawed prototype of the son of David who is to come, King Jesus. Kingdom come, sure. We've seen it. We've seen it on these pages. But if you don't know anything about First or Second Samuel, you might have thought that this would end with David like on the throne, and you've heard many great things about him, and you might, man, just like the music fades and the credits roll, and it feels good, but like it just doesn't. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good for them. It doesn't feel good for us. And with no commentary from God, what do we make of this? So we have to be careful. If the intention of this passage is to paint a picture where God delivers us from all of our earthly problems just in the nick of time, then I have some problems with that, right? And more than that, you have problems with that I have to sit across from you and deal with week in, week out. And one of my options is to say, well, if God failed you and didn't provide for you in the way that you had hoped, then God is a failure. Or, if the promise that we glean from this is that God will always take you out of the situation and eventually the water will shut off and the land will dry, the other thing I can tell you is that your faith isn't strong enough. It's a you problem. But I won't tell you either one of those things. because that's not the reality that we're dealing with, right? If that's true, then God's people have already found the place of eternal life with no ultimate sickness, and kids don't get in trouble for breaking windows, and you don't give account for mistakes that you make at work where your money, where the company loses money, they just overlook those things, or you get tangled in webs of sin and consequence, and all those things are just swept away and forgotten. But that's not what's happening here. That's prosperity ideology, prosperity theology, which we probably believe a whole lot more of than we would think that we do. But all of that is on the surface, and sometimes decisions have consequences that tear down trust with no way out, and sometimes we end up in jail for crimes committed. We might say, God, where, deliver me. Give me the loophole that I was watching the dramas unfolding on TV. Where's the loophole to get me out of this mess that I made for myself? Can you imagine any more authentic prayers prayed than in courtrooms where life and freedom is in the balance? But I'm not giving you promises that God won't keep. God delivers David from a tangled web he had spun for himself. And everyone who ever has been is tangled in a web that's been long spun before us and long spun by us. The reality is that we are in deep. That you are in real deep. That you are absolutely in over your head. That I am floating at sea, and the boat is pulling away, and there is nothing that I can do. That's where we must find ourselves. You know why? Well, many reasons why, but Romans 3:23 famously kind of paints out this reality. It says, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." You might be like, "Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, I'm a sinner," but what I want you to know is that is a real big problem. It's bigger than any problem you've ever experienced in your entire life without comparison. That all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. You are so far in over your head that you can't even believe it. I'll say it this way, you are not okay. I am not okay. That is the foundation of a Christian life. If you've never come to that place where you said, I am not okay. I am not all right. I have sinned against God himself, and I have fallen short of his glory. If you've never done that, then you are right now, you are in the biggest dilemma that you have ever faced, and the biggest dilemma that you will ever face. You thought it was the flat tire. You thought it was the doorknob that fell off when you tried to grab it. It's not. It's this reality. There's a song by a band called Sanctus Real. In the chorus, he says, "I'm not all right. I'm broken inside, and all I go through, it leads me to you." The beauty in that truth. You are not all right, but you are not without hope. And just as David has absolutely nothing to do with the way that God delivers him, God intervenes. Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." Romans 3:24, "And they are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus." The greatest unexpected rescue of all time. And we read on. We experience patterns of life going on, right? That's why we say, hey, life goes on. What are you going to do? Verse 9. Achish answered, remember David, he has a super high emotional intelligence. He is a king, he's competent, he's a lion slayer, and he's a poet. He wrote the majority of the Psalms. He's decent with words, right? I read this and I think, I don't trust him, right? because he's just too savvy to make this plea with this king and say, like, what have I done? Like, what? Name one thing that I've done. If the king knew, you've been slaying Philistines, man, woman, and child, every day for months. That's what you've done, David. And David says with a pretty straight, convincing face, what have I done? So then we read on. Achish answered David, I'm convinced that you are as reliable as an angel of God. Like, that's what he's glazing, right? That's what's happening there. But the Philistine commanders have said, he must not go into battle with us. So get up. Here's what I want you to do. Get up early in the morning, you and your master's servants who came with you. When you've all gotten up early, go as soon as it's light, like daybreak, you have to be gone. So David and his men got up early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went on to do battle. Life is crazy, and we weave webs, and pipes break, and doorknobs pull off, and tires go flat, and boats sail away while you float in the body of water, and kids spill things, right? All of that is true. The way that scene ends with Cousin Larry and Balky Bartokamus, all the water, they finally find a shutoff valve under the sink, he turns it off, and they're just sopping wet, and Larry says, well, that's what he says. And then the music, commercial, whatever. All of that. Oh my gosh. Tensions are so high. Shut off valve. Water in face. Well, at the end of the show, you know how it ends, probably. You could probably figure it out. They sit on the couch with their girlfriends, and they're like having a glass of wine or something. And you see a couple drops on the table, and then you see a torrent of water fall from the upstairs bathroom, just dousing them on the couch. Ah, there it was. They didn't fix it. It turns out they didn't fix it. Who would have thought, right? And I don't know. I share that with you because it's a core memory of me watching that show when I was 8 years old. I have no idea why. But what I don't know, but I'm pretty confident that they never mentioned anything about, hey, remember that whole, when you guys tried to fix the shower? And I don't think the next episode they just showed like the dehumidifiers and the fans and like the cleanup crew. And they're like, man, this has been it's been 2 weeks since that fateful day. No, they never talked about it again. Everybody just went back home. The scene was over. The scene ended. And it was never on their radars again. My point is, in the moment, it was the biggest deal. And two blinks later, it was completely off of the radar. Repeat that. That is our life. There isn't much to say here. What do you want me to tell you from this passage? There is not much to say here. The stakes are high, and then they resolve for good or bad. What that means is at the end of the day, when you're facing your dilemma, you get suspended, or you get fired, or you get convicted, or someone ends up dying. That's how the scene ends. Or you get acquitted, and you get promoted, and you get healed. And either way, life rolls on. And it might not be the same. You go back home. And look, we will turn the page in this book in a short time, and life will go on, and guess what? David's like, oh my gosh. Guys, high fives. Here, have an Uncrustable. Whoo, psh, psh, right? Man, like, how did we get out of that? Like, God, you are good, or whatever he says, right? Life rolls on, but hear me, when David gets back to camp, he's got another mess to deal with because of decisions that he made. And we witness firsthand patterns. We see done, on to the next one over and over again. How often are you entangled in webs and you find relief and you go home and the crisis is resolved and maybe you give God thanks and maybe you just start praying for the other thing that was weighing you down. Like, we get to be people that acknowledge what's happening to us, in us, around us, through us, And we get to be people of thanks. But here's the thing. Some of you in this room have disconnected for the last 35 minutes because you reject the reality that you're in over your head. You say, well, man, gosh, I'm in a pretty good position in my life. I make pretty decent decisions. I make pretty decent money. I have the American dream. That's what I go home to. And as long as I don't screw that up day by day, life feels pretty comfortable and pretty good. And so you've heard this up to this point, and you've said, yeah, man, I know those people. Gosh, they work for me. I work next to them. And here's what I want you to know. You've missed the point. And some of you on the other side, you're not living a comedy. You're not living even a dramedy. You are living a drama where every person, yourself included, makes the worst possible decision every single opportunity you get. And your life is just a spin cycle of bad decisions and bad things that happen to you and bad things that happen through you. And you feel like a screw up with clouds that just follow over you wherever you go. And everybody else, they're just walking on sunshine. Guess what? You missed the point too. And everywhere in between. See, this isn't a sermon about overcoming your daily burdens or getting in deep and the hope of a new day despite poor decision making. This is a sermon about God's mighty hand to deliver from the deepest muck and mire we could ever get ourselves into, and he does so in the most unexpected way. Here's our anchor for our life, for our day, for our minds. It's the anchor to cling to today and forever. Have this mind among you that God saves sinners, and of all the sinners, I am chief. That's where you begin. You want to follow Jesus? What does it look like? I don't know. I don't know all the things. I don't know what book to read. I don't know. You want to follow Jesus? Start here today and every day. Of all the sinners on the planet, I am chief. But God saves sinners just like me. And he does it in the most unexpected way. Man gets stuck in muck. Jesus joins the muck to lift us out of the muck, and he stays in the muck, and he cuts us free from the webs that we've spun, and he saves, and life goes on. But unlike the sitcom, it changes everything. And we don't just forget about that plumbing incident. Remember that? No, this is the anchor of our life. This reality, this weight that's upon us, this web that we've spun, it changes everything about everything. We get into tangled webs, but God is faithful to deliver his people for his purposes. That's true for David, and that's true for you. There are different plans and different means, but it's the same purpose, new life, new day, new you, because of his work. Because if you trust that and you behold that as the anchor of your life, the life of Jesus, perfect before God, becomes your life. It's infused together. And God sees you and he says, yeah, screw up on the surface. Yeah, fudge some numbers there. Yeah. All these things, struggle parenting, struggle as a kid, all the things. And he says, but when I see the son or daughter, they are mine and they are good. Not because of you, but because Jesus entered into the muck with us and he delivered us out of it. The band can come on up. See, in life, we will get in over our heads. We will spin the web and we will get stuck in it. But all of those situations, what they get to do in us is they get to draw a bigger picture of our status with God. We're in deep in our own sin with no way out. But our hope is, but God, rich in mercy, because of his great love for us, he has snatched us from our mess. He has set our course back home, home with God and with his people. These Philistine men rescued David because they feared betrayal. And this Jesus, he built his life running to betrayal so that his people might be rescued. And so what I'm inviting you into today is this: believe that you are in deep. And turn to the only one who can rescue you, follow Jesus and delight in him all of your days. And we get to do that together with these people around us, and life will go on until he comes to take us home. So today we get to set the course, remind one another of that reality. And we get to do that by sharing a meal, bread and juice. And Jesus says, do this as often as you do in remembrance of me, my body broken for you, my blood spilled to rescue you. And so for those of you who behold that as the anchor of your life and hope, we get to take communion. We get to delight in it. We get to reflect beforehand and say, God, would you wash me clean? Would you take these thoughts away? Would you remind me that I am forgiven by your work and not my own? We get to remember and declare these truths by taking communion together. And if you're not in him, that's not for you. But we would love for you to respond no matter who you are, no matter what you brought into this place. You can sit down, you can think, you can look at the reflection questions on the screen, you can sing with the band, stand up, you can pray over there by yourself, you can pray with my wife and I or someone else over there. Look, you don't have to pray about things that I said in the sermon. You can pray about anything that's burdening you. We want to bear together with your struggles and in your delight. So we would love to pray with you. Would you pray with me now? God, thank you for this word. Thanks be to God that you deliver us from webs that we spin ourselves, from places that we get ourselves stuck into. Thank you that you do that for us. You change us. Would you let us remember what you've done, delight in you all the days of our life. In Jesus' name.